Like I said, I'm Pam, now Pollock. It's my pleasure to introduce our speaker tonight. This man helped me get sober, but prior to helping me get sober, I had a resentment against him and AA because he and AA had helped my best friend get sober, and I had lost my best friend, so I either need to get sober or kill her because she was so happy all the time. And she had invited me to go to a Sunday morning meeting with her and just listen to this guy talk, because he's always at that meeting and he says a lot of good stuff. So, you know, I was raised Southern Baptist. You go somewhere on Sunday morning at 11, you sit down, you listen, a guy speaks for an hour, and you don't drink coffee, and you don't smoke. And so I went, and it was an open discussion meeting, and he sat there and didn't say a word the whole meeting. So that cut into an hour of my drinking time, and I didn't hear anything from him. So, but it would have fallen on deaf ears anyway, because I wasn't ready then. A couple of months later, I came back for me that time, and picked up my white chip at that same meeting, and started on this path, this journey that he's helped me greatly with. And with that, I give you Jimmy E.
Thank you, Kay. Do we use this? So you'll see. I'm Jimmy, Power Sober Alcohol. And I'm extremely grateful to be here, and Kay got even with me for that, though. I remember I was asked to speak up in Waresca once, and I know how to get there, and she said, well, I'll drive you up, Jimmy. This was before she was married. Said, I'll drive you up, Jimmy. I said, okay, so she rode me on up, and, you know, they introduced the speaker like they just did, and I got to say something. And I said, you know, I said, I didn't know how to get here, so I said, I jumped in a car with this blonde, and I said, take me to this AA meeting, you know. And so at the end of the meeting, and the meeting was over, and they asked for announcements, and Kay leaned over to me, and she says, you better announce that you need a ride home. I'll never forget that, and, you know, and my friend Claude, who read traditions, he likes to read traditions because he's one of the very few of us that can say anonymity, you know. I'm riding with Claude one night, pouring rain, unbelievable. The rain's coming down like this little town, a little hamlet or something, whatever they call them. And these are flashing blue lights, and we get pulled over. Holy Christ, what's going on here? So the state trooper gets out, you know, and he's got that starched uniform on and the wide-brimmed hat and everything. He goes up, and Claude rolls down the window. We're sitting in a nice warm car. Trooper leans in, and he says, you know why I stopped you? And Claude says, no. He says, you know you went through a stop sign back there? Claude says, no, I didn't know that. He says, you know you got one tail light out? He says, no, I didn't know that. And the trooper says, you don't know much, do you? Claude says, no, but I'm not standing out in the rain. My problem is I ride with weird people. There's nothing wrong with me. I always say, Jimmy, be careful about the people you pick to ride with. You know, that's important. But, yeah, I'm power sober alcohol. I got questioned on that once. You know, of course, I go to many, many, many meetings, and I'm all over New York where I got sober, and I've been down here about 11, 12 years, and a guy said to me, you know, Jimmy, I always hear you say you're Jimmy, powerless over alcohol. He says, well, you don't say you're alcoholic. What, are you afraid to say it or ashamed to say it? And I said, no. I said, I'm powerless over alcohol. I said, I've often said I'm Jimmy. I said, I'm alcoholic. It means that, you know, I'm alcoholic. But I stress I'm powerless over alcohol. And he says, why? And I said, well, you know, I said, I go to a lot of meetings. I've been over the years. And I said, I see many people come, go out, and come back. And sometimes they go out and don't come back, but in and out quite a few. And I've heard a lot of them say, and you probably heard it yourself. Somebody might say, well, you know, I didn't think I was alcoholic. I just didn't believe that I was really alcoholic. Might have been around 6-8 months. So I said, I thought maybe I could take one drink. I thought maybe I could have one drink. You see, when we all came in here, and I know myself, tried to identify with what we thought an alcoholic was. And naturally, the common description of somebody that is not familiar with the program is somebody that sleeps in the weeds and wears the old trench coat with the wine bottle. But that is somebody, some real legal description in their mind of what an alcoholic is. And some people will come to meetings and listen and say, you know, I never got a DUI. maybe I'm not alcoholic. The guy said he never lost a job over the drink. He said, because maybe he's not an alcoholic. And somebody said, well, I've been married for so many years and we're not divorced. And maybe, you see, they're trying to identify with what an alcoholic is, their own description of what an alcoholic might be. And that's why I say, my friends, that I'm Jimmy and I'm powerless over alcohol. You see, I began to understand when I first came in, I didn't really identify with a lot of that. And I said, how can I be an alcoholic like these people? Most of them didn't do as much time as I did. You know, I was reversing it, really. And so I'm saying, well, wow. I said, but then I began to understand. I drank for the effect. That's why I drank. I didn't drink to be sociable, I mean, all the time. I didn't drink because I drank for the effect that the booze would give me. A prime example is, and I often speak of it because it's true, when I was up north, this guy calls up on a Sunday, just before I came to the program. He says, Jimmy, he says, why don't you move the house? He says, we're watching the football game, and Joe's coming over, he's bringing a six-pack, you know? And right away, three of us in a six-pack. So I didn't go. And I bet you none of you would have went either. You know, we've already equated the two, and how am I going to palm one when they're not looking, so I'll have three. That's what the alcoholic does. I didn't go because there wasn't going to be enough booze. And see, so I began to realize that's what alcoholism is. Drinking for the effect. Taking one drink and not being able to predict the outcome. That's alcoholism. Saying I'm going to have one knowing that you're not. And if you only do any because you didn't want to have more, it's because for some reason you couldn't. That's alcoholism. And I try to identify with a lot of people I don't identify with in their story. I mean, as far as I know, I do with the drinking part, but not with what they went through in their lives. So would you probably identify totally with what I went through in my life and say, well, you know, maybe I'm not an alcoholic. Maybe I'm not, because I didn't do all those things that guy did, or all them things that happened to him haven't happened to me. And this is what I have to understand. So when I say to myself, I'm Jimmy, I'm powerless over alcohol, it makes me realize, too, how spiritually wise this program was written, my friends, because the very first part of the very first step says, we admitted we were we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. You see, they knew that some would try to find that escape in that word, I'm an alcoholic, or maybe I'm not an alcoholic. You know what alcoholic me is? I'll tell you something. This is a disease of being powerless over alcohol, but they had to name it something. So they could have named it beerism. They could have named it liquorism. They could have named it wineism. They could have named it drunkenism. But for some reason, they named it alcoholism. But alcoholism means you're powerless over the first drink. And until we can understand that and admit it to ourselves, this program probably won't be too favorable to anyone who first doesn't understand the meaning of what alcoholism means. You see, we have to understand that. Powerlessness over alcohol is the reason we're in these rooms. Being powerless, not because you got DUIs, not because your wife left you, not because you lost a job because of drink. Geez, I told this guy, and this is the reverse, it was true. I says, I never had a job because of alcohol. I didn't want one. He says, well, alcohol, yeah, alcohol is the curse of the working man. I says, no, my friend, work is the curse of the drinking man. Gee, well, really, you know, I retired the first half of my life, I guess, and now I'm working the second half. Holy Christ, but I don't know why I should have done it in the reverse. I did everything in the reverse because if I had an alcoholic mind. And so it's so important to remember that we are powerless. We are powerless. Don't give yourself that escape or that out by saying, well, you know, this didn't happen to me. That didn't. Maybe I can have one. Maybe I can have one. Anytime I think, or if I did think, that maybe I can have one, in my own mind, I'm inviting back the headache and the heartache and the hangover and the lonely nights and the lonely days and the wasted days and the wasted nights of alcoholism. Every day was a holiday. Every night was New Year's Eve. This guy says, well, I don't know. He says, boy, it's coming up on New Year's Eve. And, you know, every night, you know, I just get off because it's going to be New Year's Eve. And I says, well, wait a minute. Suppose you get all tensed up and worried because it'll be New Year's Eve. And all of a sudden, you look at the calendar and find out, wow, it's 2 weeks down the road. I thought it was tonight. You see, it's all mental. it's a physical obsession, but it's mental. It's all mental, and that's how we get out of what got us here. That's how, you know, I go into the prisons a lot and the penitentiaries, and many times I will say, you know, and this is so true. I says, if you guys leave here, by leaving here I mean go out on parole or your time is up or whatever. If you leave here with the same mind that brought you here, you're going to come back. Now, what does that tell us about our alcoholism? Once we put down the drink a day at a time, if we don't change our thinking, we will not change our lives. The only way I can change my life, my friends, is to change my thinking. And this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says we must have a psychic change. And the psychic change we're talking about is the spiritual part of AA, and it's a spiritual program, whether you like it or not, whether you want it or not, it's what it is. And without the spiritual part of AA, you're just not drinking. And if you're just not drinking, you're a double-minded person. And a double-minded person will never be content. What's a double-minded person? There are many times there's people sitting in these rooms right here, right now, wishing they were in a saloon. And there's many in the saloons knowing they should be in here. That's a double-minded person, and they will never be content. Never be content in life. We must make a decision. You know what you think brought you here. Now you want to return to it? There it is. It's in that glass out there. It's in that glass if you want to go back. You know, after this very evening, what powerlessness is, what alcoholism is. And if you think, my friends, you have any problem in life, any problem whatsoever, as an alcoholic, and take one drink, you've got two problems right away. And all the more that drink is going to bring you. Please believe me. That's why when people go in and out and go in and out and go in and out, and somebody says, maybe we should have a first step meeting. This person keeps going in and out. I said, first step? No. They understand the first step. Second step, return us to sanity. Return us to sanity. Anyone who's been in here for any length of time, and listen to the stories in these rooms, and to divulge their own horrors of alcohol and decide they're going to go out and drink again. Second step, return me to sanity if I get that kind of thought. There's something wrong with my thinking. And this is a thinking program. It's, please believe me, it was my human mind that kept me out there. And it's my spiritual mind that keeps me in here. And that's the difference. That's the difference. The same mind that drank will always want to drink. Same mind that drank will never be comfortable in these rooms. That's what I'm talking about. You can put down that drink and say you've been sober 6-8 months. But unless you're grasping on to the spiritual content of AA, you're just not drinking. And that's why some will say, you know, I wish I could drink like normal people. Have you heard that statement from somebody around sometimes a year or two? I wish I could drink like normal people. Well, number one, no alcoholic wants to drink like normal people. Number two, being an alcoholic, you're being powerless, you know you can't. And why would you want to? Normal people can have one or two and walk away. That used to be the worst part of my night, seeing somebody do that. Gee, what the hell you come in here for? And then people never set them up either. Did you ever notice that? That's another thing about the alcoholic mind, you know. I remember you going there, you know, bring out the bankroll, you know, give them a drink, you know, you don't even know who they are, you know, have one yourself, this and that, you know. That's the alcoholic mind. Let me tell you how sick and perverted that mind is. You walk into a coffee shop. When I was young, we used to have a lot of coffee shops, diners, you know, like something like the Waffle House. And you walk in, you pull out a roll of bill and say, give them another coffee. That's a guy of milk. I said, give her another lemonade, and hey, here's something. Hey, you're just goof. But if you're buying alcohol, it's approved. I began to realize what a wacko I was. Wow. I'm in a resort. I may get to my story a little bit. I was on the lam for quite a few years. In fact, I got married. I got extradited on my honeymoon from Baltimore, Maryland, back to, well, I was with the boys, as you might say. Not hubcap thieves, my friends, with organized crime. But I was up in a northern resort area once, up in northern New York, in a chalet-type thing, and they were skiing and this and that. And I'm in there with a couple guys, and we're wheeling and dealing. I don't know what we were doing, you know, and buying drinks. And I said, them guys at the back booth, the table, and the bartender knew me. He says, hey, give me a drink. He says, Will you give them a drink? Jimmy, that's the BCI. They're following you around. I said, well, get them drunk then. Maybe I can shake them. And what a guy this guy had. This guy had an unbelievable mind. See, I got indicted for flim-flam many times. This car walked in to pick me up. Said, I don't watch a lot of movies on TV, but he says, I'm watching the flim-flam, man. He's on TV. Remind me a lot of things. And they had this resort area, and they had these big Grecian urns that were imported from Greece. I'm telling you, they were about 5 feet tall, and they had some other majestic things that, you know, these curators would really like to have, and we knew the value of them, see? So don't you know, he gets on the phone, and he calls this guy Windhausen. He had the plane up there for weather, and he announced, you know, that there's a baby hurricane heading this way and everything, and everybody's running and hiding and jumping in their cars and going down the basement, and we're carrying these big urns out, putting them in the back of a truck. That was the hurricane. But this is alcohol. It's just following the booze around, you know, and that's all it really was. And, you know, so I learned, I came in here, and I don't know how you come in here and what's your excuse for drinking again or wanting to drink again. I don't know. I said, well, you don't know. I just don't have nothing. I'm really down. And, well, when I came in here, my friend, I had just finished serving 9 years of a 40-year prison sentence. Not four, 40. In Attica prison, where that infamous riot was that they made documentaries and movies out. In fact, I locked next to Jerry Rosenberg, who was the inmate lawyer, got the only law degree in prison in any state in the United States at that time, and he represented the inmates during the riot, and they made a movie on him, and Tony Danza played that part. And so, I mean, I've been around a little bit, and all I know is that when I came in to AA, I came in just about serving 9 years of my last time on a 40-year prison sentence. And while I was in there, my wife divorced me and took my baby that I loved so much, my little Shirley Temple was like, and moved to California. And I never saw my baby again for 7 more years. And all I could do, I couldn't bend the bars. And while I was in there during the riot, and after the riot, we're locked in our cells, and they're kicking everybody down the stairs and tearing cells up and everything else, you know. And they called me out in front and told me my dad died, you know. Yeah, and I know what it is. I mean, I don't show it a lot in my life, and I like to be inspirational to others as well as inspiring to myself. And so I said, well, you know, Jimmy, my father passed away. You maybe not understand, or my wife did. Well, yeah, I went through it all. I went through it all, my friends, in a damn prison cell when there's nothing you can do about it. You couldn't write. You couldn't make phone calls. You couldn't do a damn thing. But sit there. Just sit there. So I know what that is, and I came into this program with that guilt on my mind. I didn't understand what guilt was and what a terrible enemy that was to me. But I came in here feeling guilty because of my dad dying, my wife divorcing me, my not seeing my baby, my mother crying. And you know, I owed 31 years and change on parole, and I had nothing to really look forward to. I didn't know where I was or what I was doing. I had no trade, because they weren't hiring safecrackers at the time. And flim-flam artists, that's all I knew. I was a prize fighter. I was a pretty good one. I won the Golden Gloves up there, and that's because I never took a drink. And as an amateur, I fought the heavy kid that won the heavyweight title. I campaigned in central northern New York, parts of Pennsylvania and Canada, and I was quite a comer. And then I started drinking, just where I turned professional. And then I started spending more time in the saloons than I did in the gymnasiums, and I started losing to people I knew I could beat, and so I just packed that in. You know, that was alcohol. See, any good desire I had in life, any desire to be anything or become somebody, as you might say, was taken from me through alcohol. Alcoholism. It's such a powerful obsession, I'm telling you what it would do. And it took all my dreams and desires, and I started hanging around the saloons. I was a two-fisted drinker, and going in there and buying for this one and that one and that one and that one and that one. You wake up in the morning. You ever walk down the street and you say, what the hell? I got $126, but I left the house with $136. I didn't spend it. What did I do with that $10? And you go wacky over there. But I've gone out at night with $300 in my pocket, woke up at about $92. I must have had a good time. That's alcohol. We have to understand the insanity of it. That's what it is. That's what it does to us. Unbelievable. So, I don't know. So, I come into AA, and I had been, you know, like in 1 year alone. Well, I had a safe conviction. That was back in 1957, children. Now, you can say either alcohol preserved me or prison preserved me, but next month, I'll be 68 years old. But let me tell you something. I feel so dynamic, so cheerful, so powerful. You know why? Because when you get spiritually strong, when you get spiritually full, when you get spiritual embodiment, it's all power. The soul knows no age. The soul knows no age. This outside cover might know some age, but the soul knows no age. And you can tell a spiritual person, you can just feel it when you're around that person. And it's dynamic. And this is what I want to pass on to everyone in this room tonight. You know, that's my obligation that I said I would give to my to my fellow members. That if I hear, practice anything that can enrich my life and bring me further from a drink, I want to pass it on to someone else. Now, you may reject it. You may not think it's going to be for you. Or you may not want to be like me. I know God don't. He tells me that all the time. But I like me. I really do. And I like feeling like as good as I do, and as powerful as I do, and as exciting as I do inside. And I began to realize, you know, that this isn't something that I had to reach outside of myself to acquire. Did you know that? It ain't out there. I was talking the other night. Where were we the other night? Up in Cedartown. Is tonight New Year's Eve? Well, yes, they told me it was the 4th of July, you know. It was warm out, I didn't know. So, what the hell was I talking about? I was talking about when I was young, we didn't have no TV. I'm anxious. When I come home from school, we listen to the radio. But during the day, the soap operas, you know, when I'd tell my mother I was sick, I had a fever, this and that, and she couldn't find no hot on me, but all right, Jimmy, stay home. I didn't like school. But I'd have to listen to some of them soap operas on the radio. That's where they got the name. Lux Soap, Oxidol Soap. They advertised them. That's where soap opera comes from. And I'd hear this one program, The Search for Happiness. The Search for Happiness. The Search for Happiness. And my God says, why do you ask for something that you already have? Something that... Did you know that all the wonders we seek in life, you know what we're searching for in this life? All the wonders we seek in life are already here. They're already inside us. They're inside each and every one of us. In fact, everyone in this room at this very moment is just as dynamically cheerful as I am, just as powerfully optimistic as I am. The only problem is some of you don't know that. And some of you don't realize it. And some of you won't believe it even when I stand here and tell it to you. I never had to go outside myself. I thought I did it for a while. And they used to tell me, you know, like, happiness comes by on a cloud, and you better reach up and grab a handful. Well, now what kind of a fair God would it be with a 6'2" Jimmy and Steve? Well, I'd have to acquire too much happiness, an overabundance of happiness, and this poor guy wouldn't get any if I was a hog, because I'm 6'2". You see, a fair God says we don't have to go outside ourselves. It's already in there. Mandated ingredients. Mandated ingredients. A woman was crying at a meeting up north years ago. She said, there's a man. She said, well, I hear people talking about me because I'm not exciting and I don't say anything. I mean, she was a real dull one. Boy, that's dull. And not too swift up here either. But I'll tell you something. She was likable. She was like, well, you know what I told her? I said, I'm going to tell you something. And this is the truth. I said, you go to the grocery store and you buy a box of cereal, you buy a can of soup, you buy anything. The FDA, the Food and Administration, I don't want to say drug in this room. Everybody's a drug addict. Everybody's an alcoholic and a drug addict today. Just be alcoholic. That's enough. That'll get you here. So I said, maybe it can. It mandates that you risk... You list the ingredients that's on the inside. Now, what do you care what them people say about you? It's what's in here. And I already told you, God has given us all this inside. All of this exciting, powerful, dynamic. All the elements that we need are in there. Go outside, search for happiness. There may be someone or two or more in this room right now, male or female, or how to say it, male and or female. But I'm going to tell you something. That probably go from one relationship to another, to another, to another. Now, God bless them, and I love them. But you're telling me one thing. You're searching for your happiness inside someone else. And now, you know, the minute you try to start doing that, what you're going to do is you're going to be at the mercy of that person whose happiness you're trying to instill in within yourself. You know why? Because if they're upset with you, then you have a bad day. If they're angry at you, you kind of know why he or she is so mad at me. But I, you know, you can't even do the dishes feeling that way because, yeah, you're trying to find your happiness. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I'm not against love. I'm really not. But here's what I'm leading up to. Here's the spiritual fulfillment that I'm trying to explain to you. Here's what it does to you. Here's how powerful it is. Here's how individualistic it can make you. I will say this right now, this very moment, with the God's honest truth. That's the scout's honor right there. Each and every one of you, some I know and some I don't know, every one of you at this very moment can add to my life, but not one of you can take from it. Now that's powerful. And when you can say that and truthfully and feel it sincerely, you know you're going to start walking on air. Any one of you can add to my life, but not one of you can take from it. I dare you to try. I really do. And that's beyond not drinking. This is what I'm talking about. Put down the drink a day at a time. Well, you know, that's all right for those that want it. Really, I don't criticize anybody. Just that I make fun of them when I'm saying it. I don't. You get just wake up. Maybe you never heard this kind of a message. That's the whole thing. Maybe we didn't know that all this was beyond sobriety. Gee, did somebody read the promises? Yeah. Did you hear the promises? Didn't they sound great? How many promises are there? Don't let your sponsor know that you don't know how many promises.
Well, promises, but
there's more than that. Who said 11? You get 30 days free sobriety out of that. I want to say, okay, 11, but she might be wrong. That makes me wrong, too. How many promises there are? Do you know what they're telling us? Isn't it great when you hear the promises, when you hear the promises, all these wonderful things that are going to happen to you? And you say, wait a minute, you know, these are the promises. And they sound, once you reach middle-aged children. Self-seeking will slip away. Our old attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We'll intuitively know how to handle situations to baffle us. We'll suddenly realize. These are the promises. Now, when the chairperson asked someone to read the promises, they didn't say, would so-and-so please come up and read the wishes? Oh. But don't that make sense right away? Did somebody come up and please read the hopes? Would somebody come up and please read the 11 desires? No. The promises. And if this is a spiritual program, anything of God that's promised has to come into being. It has to. Well, Jimmy, how come that sucker's got more than me in this area and that one's got more than, you know, I'll tell you why. And it probably says it sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. You know what that means? Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Our ability to interpret and understand and accept. There's certain parts of this program, I bet you all of us got it right away. Sometimes quicker than somebody that's been here 2 or 3 years. There's other parts, it's like we're not even trying. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. As soon as a beautiful word, one word that's so powerful in these steps, once we become willing, guy said, you know, you hear the negatives. Well, that doesn't mean you got to. It says become willing. It doesn't mean you got to. I said, what the hell does become willing mean? If you become willing, it means you want to. If you're not willing, you don't want to. So once you become willing, that means you want to, and that's when you will. That's when you will. So this is what we have to understand about this simple little program. But we're such masterminds when we come in here.
I sponsored a district attorney up north.
Oh, gee.
I said, oh, boy, my chance to get even with this. Yeah. But you want to know something? This was a good man. And he didn't drink, and he talked. He had a pretty good program, but he was troubled by something. And once he sat me, he said, Jimmy, I'm very troubled by this. And I said, but he said he finally figured out what it was. You see, instead of accepting what he heard in the rooms, you know, from the big book and whatever, as an attorney is what he was, his almost natural thing to do was first to cross-examine it in his mind, take it apart, and see if it is the truth, try to find a fault with it or whatever. And this was holding him up from obtaining these desires and these wills that turn out to be the promises. How come some people obtain the promises and some don't? You see, as we grow spiritually, my friends, as we grow spiritually, all these promises are part of the spiritual growth. A person up north used to say, happiness is a byproduct of sobriety. Isn't that wonderful? Happiness is a byproduct of sobriety. Already that don't sound too strong, does it? Happiness is a byproduct of sobriety. I said, you know, I'll tell you something. I used to watch my mother make a cake when she was young, because one day I wanted to make cakes too, you know. I like cakes. And I used to watch her, you know, mix it up with the flour and the water, the lemon juice, and the sugar. See, all these are mandated ingredients. When that cake is done, all these things are what we call mandated ingredients in the cake. That's the recipe. Did you know that happiness is really not a part of sobriety? It's not. Happiness is of the human mind. You know what happiness is to the human mind? Happiness to the human mind is, you get a new and better car. Oh boy, I got a new and better car. Then all of a sudden, something happens. Somebody dents the fender, scratches the side, and you get the insurance bill, or it takes the glamour out. Happiness is to the human mind is a guy playing golf. He's out there with people from work that he wants to impress, and he shoots the worst game of his life. He ends up throwing his clubs up in the trees. Happiness is limited to that type of person. Happiness to the human mind is a new friend, you know, whether it's a relationship or just a friendship or what. And this is great until that new friend doesn't act like you want them to act. They start acting differently. And all of a sudden the mood set in and you have a strained relationship or a strained friendship. That's happiness to the human mind. It's limited. It's limited to just a short period of time. The novelty wears off anyway, and then you're looking for something else to make you happy. Happy comes from the outside in. My God says, we forget about it. He talks about joy, inner joy and inner peace, which is a mandated ingredient of spiritual growth. The inner joy and the inner peace, the healed relationships. It doesn't always mean that they're going to be brought back together, but they will no longer suffer from the loss of one another if one of them remains not good for the other or whatever. Healed relationships, economic insecurity will end. Did you know all these things will happen? And it's all the main part of the mandated ingredients of spiritual growth. But as you grow, these things are swept up within it. But if you don't grow, you might attach to one or two, but that's it. The rest are still out there. We have to keep growing and growing and growing spiritually. And then the promises become the promises. It's not denied to any of us. We only think it might be. And so I used to think that, I learned that all living things grow. Did you know that? All living things grow, except some people. And I was one of them people for quite a while until I began to understand that this is a program of growth. Spirituality and sobriety, one and the same, I'll tell you what it is. It's a program of increase, a program of abundance. It's more than just not drinking. But if I don't know it's there, how can I do that? You were the guy and he's running out of gas and he pulls in the gas station, he gets out and he says, wait a minute, I can't put no gas in. Why? I haven't got no money. Nobody's got no money. Well, we can't put no gas in. What are you going to do? Somehow you call, because only can put the gas. Guy gets home and he says, holy crap, I just remembered. Wow, I had $10 in my secret compartment of my wallet, you know, so the wife I trust couldn't find it. But you know, in other words, he had it but didn't know it. You can't really blame him for that, he forgot it. But to have it and know it and not use it, that's different. And when you learn things in these rooms, these powerful, dynamic things in your world, any meeting you go to, because this is a God-given program and God does not sleep and he's never off duty. You might be at times with your hearing. When you hear something in these rooms that will further strengthen your sobriety, that will enrich your life and make you feel more dynamic and powerful than when you come in, and if you don't take it out there when you leave and practice it in your life, if you do not practice it in your life, then it's just something you heard. That's all. And sooner or later you'll forget it. Did you know that? That's how we grow in this program. Not just hearing these things, but practicing them in our lives. And once you start practicing them in your lives and you see that they work, you not only can pass it on to others, you want to, because that's what spirituality is. It isn't that you should, in a sense, reach out to your fellow man. It's that you want to, that you're compelled to, and you do. Every time I pass it on, they say, I can't keep it unless I give it away. Now, what a dumb statement that was when I first heard it. You know, I come in here a dummy. I quit high school. I told him last night, this is the truth. I told this guy, I'm 3 years in high school and I'm going to quit. And he says, oh, Jimmy, that's stupid. He says, geez, one more year and you'll graduate. Don't quit. And I says, no, I'm 3 years in high school and I'm still a freshman. And he says, well, why don't you quit? So I did. And I entered the underworld and I led a life of crime. And so when I come in the AA meetings, in one of my first meetings, I'm looking around the room and I saw them. Yeah, no. Hey, must have taken them down. Yeah. Things like that. Think. I said to the guy next to me, who's the genius that wrote that? Think. What are some of them other ones, Ken? Yeah, this old guy stands there and says, looking down at me because I'm a newcomer, I could just see years and years and years of wisdom on his eyebrows, Easy does it, like Sonny, I was only 42 when I come in. 43. He says, easy does it, but do it. And I said, I had a motto in that old life. He says, what's that? I said, take it easy, but take it. Well, look what I got you. 40 years in prison. So I started to change. I started to understand that these are, this is great wisdom. It is great philosophy. These things we hear. I really did laugh the first time I heard a guy say, you can't get drunk if you don't take the first drink. I said, did you hear that genius up there? You can't get drunk unless you've done it. Oh my God, he's right. You can't get drunk if you don't take the first drink. Wow. So I thought maybe I'm not as smart as I thought I was. And I decided the day at a time I wasn't going to drink. I'm closing up the premises. They're closed for the evening. But, and then I started understanding. I didn't feel good at first because I felt like I was a racehorse at the starting gate. And I got places and I had to go. I didn't have to go nowhere, but I just had to keep moving. My emotions were racing like hell. But it was after I started to settle down, I have to understand that will leave. It will leave. I have to understand that. And then I began to listen to why some people were really seriously content and I wasn't, without a drink. And that's when I started to understand about spirituality and spiritual growth. And it's so powerful, and it's so exciting, and it's so dynamic. And what it really is, it's written into them steps. And we have to believe that. We have to understand that. Not everything, in a sense, is always that revealing to us. So I ask my God to please give me the ability to understand and interpret in this program, the big book and what people like Claude say and yourselves. I have to understand what you really mean. And it comes with it. Just like when you pray to God with a sincere heart, please, God, relieve me from that obsession to drink, and it goes away. Did you know it will? It has to. You know why it has to? If you're sincere. My God says, knock and the door will be open. Ask and you shall receive. Did you know that? That's what he means. It don't take a genius to know that. And I asked, and I received, both times. This is beautiful. I says, wow. Now I start to grow. And a guy says, well, Jimmy, you talk up there, I heard you say, day after day after day, everything is just so exciting for you. And I says, oh, yeah. When I wake up in the morning, my friends, I'm so sober. So understand that all things through the course of the day may not be to my liking, but I've accepted them already in the morning. So when they happen, you know, we used to stick me like a spear or a sword in the side, and now it's just like a dull thud. Because right reaction is the supreme part of living, and you learn how to react to things that go on in the course of a day when we're not drinking a day at a time. And I began to find out that that obsession to drink left me the most powerful obsession I ever had in my life. I listened to stories of broken homes, broken this and broken that, and lost jobs and lost careers, and people laying in the alleys that used to be fairly successful in life, looking for a wine bottle and another drink. And I'm saying that's the most powerful obsession that an alcoholic can have in their life. And how many of us in this room right now, including myself, okay, can tell you that today, no matter what situation occurs, the thought of a drink, taking a drink, never confronts my mind. Did you know that? You know the thought of a drink, of alcohol, of taking a drink, has no attraction to me? No attraction whatsoever. Did you notice that most powerful obsession I had in my life today has no value? No value whatsoever. And that's why it's left me, because it has no value in my life. We will always return to that which we find value in. Did you know that? That's why people go back out. They still see value in another drink. Did you know that? Did you know that? They still see value in another drink. That's one reason. I'll give you another reason. They're not grateful. They're not grateful for if it's just that much sobriety. Just that much, they're not grateful. Proof of that. Do you think you would ever see a grateful alcoholic drink? Do you think you would ever see an alcoholic, a drinking alcoholic that's grateful? I don't think you'll see it on either side. So we must understand gratitude is so important in our programs. Gratitude, which is, do you know what gratitude is? It's a spiritual blessing. Did you know that? Did you know that's part of the spiritual growth, gratitude? Why? Because I'll tell you something. One thing, that gratitude is a launching pad for increase. Did you know that? Gratitude is a launching pad for increase. For increase. If I'm not grateful for what I have, I don't deserve anything more. Do you deserve more for something if you're not grateful at all? What are you going to do? Trash that too? If I'm not grateful for what I have, I don't deserve anything more. If I'm not grateful for what I have, I will probably not receive anything more. And if I'm not grateful for what I have, sooner or later I'm going to lose it. Are you going to hold on and cherish and fight for something you're not even grateful for? Gratitude, my friends. Be grateful. And when you come into these rooms, I don't care how down and out you think you are, how desolate your future looks, or how broke or desolate your life is right now, if you can reach in your pocket. Wow. I'm going to take out a dime. If that's all you got between you and $1 million, is this dime. Don't curse. Don't curse what you don't have. Bless that dime, and it will start to increase. If you don't believe these spiritual laws, and you try them and they don't work, stop me sometime and tell me, Jimmy, it don't work. Throw your dime away. Kick it. I'm telling you to bless it. When you get bills you can't pay, open them up and bless them. You were grateful for the service when you got it, weren't you? Yeah. I used to think when I owed big companies money, you know, and the guy said, geez, Jimmy, aren't you worried? And I said, no, they should be worried. Wondering whether they're going to get it or not. Bother me. Gratitude. Boy, what a strong feeling that is. Put some bounce in your step and some lilt in your eye and makes you want to really live a day. Because I'm grateful for what little bit I have, not what I don't have, not what was just, in a sense, taken from me. And don't think God does it. Oh, God took that from me. He's not a Native American giver. Well, you can get sued today, you know, if you don't say the right thing. Yeah, he don't give and take back. You know what? He gives and we goof it up to our own wrong thinking. We lose it ourselves. I think God took it back. Jeez. He took 9 years, I mean, God did that, you know. Till I learned, my friends, and remember this. Take this to bed with you tonight and think on it and think on it and think on it, and you'll understand how fair this life is. That I did 9 years out of 40 the last time. And I wasn't punished for my sins. I was punished by my sins. Always remember that. You're blaming God. You know, Satan, that guy, the devil, he ain't got to do nothing. I heard he's in Bermuda. He's on vacation. Yeah, he is. You know why? Because one woman told me, you know, she was, yeah, she was raising a family without her husband. He left her because she was drinking or something. But anyway, she's got three children, and she's working two jobs, a job and a half, trying to keep the house and trying to get the kids to school and everything, see. And one day we didn't see her at meetings for about 6 weeks, and she came in and she said, I almost died. I said, what happened? She's at the meeting. She says, I almost died. What happened? She said, I had the flu, and it almost died. And I had to pay somebody to come in and watch the kids while I was sick in bed and everything. And she says, but I guess that's God's way of slowing me down. I says, God's way of slowing you down? God infected you with a disease to slow you down? Why don't you just crack your kneecaps? I mean, if he's going to do that, why not do that? God did that. Made her, your children, had her pay money that she couldn't afford for a babysitter to watch the children, give a hard time. God does. See, so Satan, he did it, but God gets blamed for it. God's got more indictments since I've been in this AA program. Yeah, yeah, he is. God does all this stuff. Satan don't do nothing anymore. I listened to this evangelist, and apparently for about, on TV, yeah, TV evangelist. And you know, this guy was probably really very spiritual because he hadn't been indicted yet, you know, like the others. And he was saying, you know, over the last 3 weeks, the congregation been praying for this child, I guess about 9 months, 10 months, was very, very sick, see. Now, the evangelist himself says, beware of false prophets, children. Mean that. I mean that. This is why we think that life is so unfair, because we believe in what the false prophets say, and the false prophets don't always know they're false. They think they're telling you the truth. This evangelist says, we don't know why God took this child. How many of you believe that? If you heard the evangelist say it, or the priest say it, or your neighbor say it. But God must have needed another angel in heaven. And God says, I am the author, the giver of life. I come so that you may have life and have it more abundantly. You read that God kills you and kills babies and takes them because he needs another angel. If you need another angel, he'd have taken Claude a long time ago. Well, he did, but he couldn't make them wings flap, you know? So he said, go back down there. He says, God puts obstacles in your way to spiritual growth. God puts obstacles in your way to spirituality. God puts obstacles in your way to sobriety. This is God knows the devastating effect of alcoholism and the allegiance that we give to that alcohol. He knows that. He knows that this is a tie that he has to break loose from. And yet when we start to grow, well, God's testing me. God put this in my way to damage me and to test me, test my sobriety. Let me tell you something. If he's anything like the God I know, he's all knowledgeable. He knows, which simply means if God tested me and I failed, it would be his fault, right? He tested me too much. Would God test us too much? He says himself about living in a day at a time. There is enough evil in one day that we should spread our minds out over next week and Friday and Saturday. When I was married once, I'll give you a good example of that. I was on the lam in Baltimore, and I couldn't go back to my hometown in New York. And we just got married, and Sarah wasn't used to being on the lam, you know, my wife. And I'm peeking out the windows and everything else, you know, like in them 3B movies, you know. Get back, Sarah, put that light on. Well, I mean, that was my life. She knew that. I told her I wasn't 9 to 5. Well, ain't you home for supper? You know what her mother did? That dirty rant. You know what her mother sent me for Christmas? You're going to believe this. Here I'm one of the most wanted up in New York. She sends me this Christmas. I says, your mother-in-law's got to change your heart. My mother-in-law's got to change your heart. She says, Sal, your mother sent me a present for Christmas. I opened it up. You know what it was? That dirty red. It was a silver lunch pail with a thermos bottle in it. Get a job. I pretended I didn't know what it was. I said, what's this? I said, the firm is upside down. You know what it is. Get a job. So she's saying to me, she says, yeah, this is a, they talk about worrying over the future, not living in today. She says, well, you know, she says, next week the rent's due and we don't have it. I says, geez, Sal, I'm setting up a score. You know, she says, well, we don't have the rent. She says, what are we going to do? That's Monday. See, Tuesday. We don't have the rent. We don't have the rent. It's due in 6 days. Wednesday. We don't have the rent. I said, Sal, wait a minute. I'm going to tell you something. For 3 or 4 days now, you've been harping about we don't have the rent. I said, I'm going to tell you something. When the first of the month comes and I don't have the rent, then you worry. All this is premature. It really is, you know. And unbeknown to her, I went out and got that rent. And I paid that rent with somebody else's money, but I did it. I says, now, smart aleck, start worrying about next month. But this is the kind of, this is alcohol and alcohol. This is alcohol. Abusing myself. You know, I hear the drug abuse. Drug abuse, like a guy takes, I've never used drugs. They weren't in vogue when I was out there. And while I went away, I came back out and I couldn't believe it. You had to lock your car at night. You had to shut your windows. I couldn't believe that. Lock your car? Yeah, kid next door will steal it. Everybody will steal because they're all on drugs. Did you know that? So anyway, the guy says, right here, said this, drug abuse. Drug abuse, like you take this. Do they have pills they take, drugs? Yeah. Well, it's like taking them and taking this, bang, that's drug abuse, bang, bang. You're abusing the drug, right? Why don't they tell the truth and maybe some people will think before they continue? It's brain abuse, mind abuse, body abuse, moral abuse, drug abuse. Geez, that's why they all feel like heroes. But if you say, you know, the same way with alcohol. You think you're a hero because you abuse your mind? Because you attack your own liver? This is smart thinking? We have to understand that. And that's what AA does to us. Hey, am I supposed to talk till midnight or what? Oh my God. I went in prison with a pocket watch. I wasn't going to change, you know. I still wear the double-breasted suits, you know, the soft, wide-brim hats and so. And these guys walk around in tank tops and shorts, and they say, look at that guy. He's from the last century, you know. And I say, look at these guys. You know what I mean? I don't know. I see a guy at a wedding and a guy at a wake with a tank top on, and I say, no, I don't know. Am I supposed to change? I said, no, I'm just going to stay sober and stay close to God. And wear my pocket watch. But I love you. I'd like to keep going, but better than that. I get in the good part, but I can't. I just want to, you know, really make a message that tonight, I guess, the message is, children, that once we put down the drink, if we don't change, we're the same person that drank. And we're going to invite the same chaos back into our lives because we're that same person, just absent of a drink. In fact, without the drink, we might even try to do it in a little slicker way. But we're going to get it back. Unless you change, the same person that drank will always want to drink again. And I had a long talk. I was staying up in Carter's, the other place last night. I had a long talk with that guy Satan. He's not in my life anymore, but he's trying to get me back into his. He says, come on, Jimmy, I'll make you a lieutenant. And I says, no. I says, come on, I'll make you a captain. I says, no, Satan, I don't like you anymore. I'm staying over here. I says, let me ask you a question. And he says, what's that? And I says, if you were stripped of all your powers to corrupt mankind, if every power you had to corrupt mankind was taken from you, except one, what would that one power be that you could still have and corrupt mankind? He says, that's easy. I says, well, what is it? What is it? He says, it's easy. Negative thinking. Negative thinking. Wrong thinking. So remember this tomorrow morning. When you get up, those of you who look in the mirror, I look in the mirror every morning, you'll be looking at either your very best friend or your very worst enemy, according to what's in your mind. And if you're thinking negative, my friends, you don't need any enemies, because you've got yourself, as long as you want to continue to think negative. Thank you.